Welcome to a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from holidays past. I'm your host, Mark Lavonier, and there's comedy in the cellar. Later on, from Fibber McGee and Molly from 1945. But first, it's The Halls of Ivy, an NBC episode from December 19th, 1951.
And now, The Halls of Ivy.
That surround us here today, and we will not forget, though we be far, far away.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. Five people didn't go to bed at all last night here at Ivy. Grogan, the campus policeman who was making his rounds, two sophomores and a freshman who were investigating certain mathematical phenomena, such as the odds against drawing to an inside straight, and Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, the president of Ivy, who's been working at his desk in the study of his home since shortly after dinner yesterday. The chapel bell is striking eight as his wife, the former Victoria Cromwell of the London Stage, enters and says,
"Good morning, Dr. Hall."
"Good morning."
"And congratulations. You've just set a new record for going without sleep. Any statement for the press, champ?"
Yes, I'm glad to bring the cup back to Ivy, where it belongs, and I'm looking forward with great confidence to the international match in Brussels next spring."
"Oh, poor darling. How do you feel?"
"Oh, surprisingly well, if the ability to cope with whimsy on an empty stomach is at all indicative. Do I look awful?"
"Interesting, rather. One so seldom sees a chartreuse complexion."
"Bad as that, eh? Well, it's worth it. One seldom sees an annual report as superb as the one I've just finished writing. Here, have a look."
"Let's see. The state of the college."
"Or, in the vernacular, out of the red and over the hump with Hall."
"You sound enormously set up about it."
"I've reason to be. I'd no idea how much I'd accomplished last year until I put it all down in black and white. The endowment fund is up, the building fund is up, enrollments are up."
"And what are you doing up? Will you be working very much longer this morning?"
"I'm ready for bed."
"Well, good. Penny will be right in with your overcoat and hat."
"My overcoat and hat? Vicky, we've been married long enough for me to make a confession. I never go to bed wearing an overcoat and hat. I'm one of those odd fellows who slips between the sheets wearing only pajamas. I know I should have revealed this before,
stop.
But I..."
"I told Penny to bring in our hats and coats because I'm taking you for a walk. A short walk for relaxation, a light breakfast, and then a good long sleep."
"Excuse
then
me,
you'll be...
Mum.
Yes,
I've
Penny.
Brought your things. Good morning, sir."
"Oh, good morning, Penny. I'll take those. Thank you. You're looking well this morning, Penny."
"Thank you very kindly, sir. And you're looking... It's a very nice morning for a walk."
"You don't say."
"Yes, sir. It snowed last night. The first real snow we've had this year, and it's ever so lovely. Makes one want to go out and throw snowballs at top hats."
"Well, feel free to do so whenever the spirit moves you, Penny. I'm ready, Victoria. Penny, you didn't by any chance notice the snowman on our front lawn, did you?"
"Should I have, sir?"
"Well, after the first really good snowfall of the year, the students have the custom of building a snowman in front of the home of each faculty member. You've heard of that, haven't you?"
"No, sir."
"And the more affection they have for you, the larger the snowman they build."
"There ain't one on our lawn." "Allow me, sir."
"Why, I dare say the snow fell too late for them to have taken advantage of it last night."
"Which way should we walk, Toddy? Along Faculty Row?"
"Yes, that'll do nicely."
"Be back in half an hour, Penny." "That custom the students have. It's almost cruel in a way."
"Not in the least. I admit it must seem so to those members of the faculty for whom very small snowmen are built, but they survive. Professor Heaslip, for example, has survived years of snowmen not much larger than a Drosophila fruit fly."
"Professor Heaslip is lucky the students built any token of affection on his lawn. If anything, his personality suggests excavation."
"And the report I've just finished makes it more certain than ever he won't get my job, his carefully cultivated friendship with the chairman of the board notwithstanding. That's really a smashing report, Vicky. I raised almost $1 million in endowments. Built
what? What's wrong?
Look, there's a snowman in front of Professor Quincannon's house.
Oh.
Well, the snow came early enough after all.
Well, perhaps it wasn't the students, Toddy. Professor Quincannon has 2 children. They may have built it. Children build snowmen, too, you know.
Of course, that must be it. I mean, after all, there's no reason to suppose the students would build one for Quincannon and overlook me, is there? I mean, there's no reason to suppose they're antagonistic to me. I don't see why they should be. Do you?
No, of course they're not. You were telling me about your smashing report. Toddy, come on.
Oh, yes, my report. I suppose I shouldn't have said it's a smashing report. It's not really smashing, but it's a darn good one. I believe I may say, without immodesty, that I'm good at my job. After all, a college president must have ability and
keenness of vision?
Well, all college presidents have keen vision. A few, in fact, can even see themselves in the White House in 1952. You know, I knew a man once who...
I'm listening. What? What are you staring at?
A snowman in Professor Howard's front yard.
Oh, yes. Oh, I suppose Professor Howard's children must have built one, too.
Professor Howard is a bachelor.
Of course, I'd forgotten. Well, then, Professor Quincannon's children must have come over from next door. I remember when I was a child, I used to build snowmen all over the place. Couldn't get enough of them. Fairly cover the landscape and build one in front of my house and one next door and then one further down the street.
Yes, they could have come over from next door, couldn't they? Quincannon's children, I mean.
Well, of course they could.
Yes, they could have jumped over the hedge or even come around that way through the gate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not much more than 30 paces. And you know, they're very active youngsters, positively hyperthyroid.
Oh, they are.
Oh, one probably said to the other, let's build one now on old Howard's lawn.
Yes, exactly. As a matter of fact, I seem to remember having heard children shouting something like that earlier this morning. You were telling me about your report.
Hmm?
Your report. I want to hear more about how darn good it is.
Oh, well, I suppose I shouldn't have said it's a darn good report. It's not really. It's a fair report. A little more. Vicky, darling, you spend much more time with the students than I do, really. What with your coaching the junior follies and all, you haven't heard any grumbling about my administration, have you?
None, Toddy, none.
Ah. It wasn't a very tall hedge, you know. Quincannon's children could have jumped over.
Or crashed through. I mean, they're very sturdy.
Oh, it's the most natural thing in the world.
Yes, Toddy, let's turn down this street. I'm rather tired of Faculty Row. Same old hedges, same old houses. This street seems very charming.
Really? You find that row of garbage pails charming?
Oh, well, I suppose not. Oh, dear. There's a snowman in front of Professor Warren's house, too.
The young Quincannons have had quite a busy morning.
Good morning, Doctor.
Ah, good morning, Dr. Warren.
Good morning, Mrs. Hall.
Good morning.
Out for a stroll?
Yes, we're out for a stroll.
Well, I find there's nothing like it on a morning like this for getting rid of the doldrums. Don't you?
Occasionally.
We were just admiring the snowman in your front yard. It has a great deal of character.
Oh, it's a pip, isn't it? I know it's not supposed to be good form for a faculty member to pay any attention to this sort of thing. But when you're 70, as I am, hypocrisy is too much of a strain. I just look at that gleaming monster and glow, Doctor. Glow.
Well, I don't blame you. And yet, the custom in some cases can be cruel, don't you think? I mean, the ones that don't get built.
Nope. Not the custom that's cruel. It's the crushing impact of truth. Some people can't stand up under it at all. You take a president of Ivy we had in 1900. That's before your time. Bessemer was his name. 1 year, every member of the staff had a snowman except Bessemer. Old Pop Gut Bessemer. He resigned a few weeks later, for reasons of health, of course.
Oh, that seems very impulsive of him, a little drastic.
Well, Ivy's a small school and always has been. Personalities play a much bigger part than they do at some of these giant diploma factories. You wouldn't care to continue as president if you knew that the students would much rather tie a can to your tail, would you, Doctor?
Well, that's an interesting way to put it, but no, I suppose not.
Why, of course not. You look at it this way, Mrs. Hall. Teaching hardly ever pays off in money. The average prof makes only about $2,500 a year. And it hardly ever pays off in glory. I myself can name 10 baseball players or burlesque queens, bless them, for every teacher you can bring to mind. Well, then, what makes an old party like me, the last of the tobacco-chewing professors, or a man like your husband stay with it?
Pride in the job, I suppose.
Pride in the job. That and the feeling that maybe we're helping the young savages become not scholars, but men and women, and that they appreciate it. Take that away and what's left?
Absolute zero.
Here I am lecturing the president. Tell you, when you arrive at my age and succeed in conning people to regard you as a lovable old gaffer, you get away with murder. Care to come in for coffee?
No, thank you. We have breakfast waiting at home.
That's the wisest decision you've made today. In all the world, no one concocts as nauseating a cup of coffee as I do. I'll see you soon, I hope, ma'am.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Dr. Warren.
He's a pip, isn't he? My snowman.
The very word for it, he's a pip.
Careful, don't slip on that snow.
By the way, Vicky, did I tell you I received a letter from Quesnel University this week?
I don't believe you did, Toddy. Why?
Well, they haven't heard of the renewal of my contract as president here at Ivy, and they've made me a very flattering offer. Treasurer of the university. At almost the same salary I have here.
Toddy.
Further, and, perhaps of more importance, it's a purely administrative job. I wouldn't come into contact with students at all. Not ever.
Toddy.
They requested the courtesy of a reply this week. It's really a most flattering offer. I think I'll accept. Yes, I think it would be best.
The halls of Ivy that surround us here today.
Returning to the halls of Ivy, we find a dispirited Dr. Hall strolling in the snow along Faculty Row with Mrs. Hall.
You're very quiet, Victoria.
I know. I'm concentrating. Trying to think of the right thing to say.
Oh, you don't have to say anything, my dear. The silent eloquence of the students has left very little unsaid.
Toddy, I know how you must feel. In a small way, I've been through it a number of times in the theater. Playing for laughter and applause and getting the rustle of programs and a few coughs. You can say to yourself, chin up and good show, carry on, all that. And over it all, you can hear the lorries backing up to the stage door to haul the scenery away.
Well, this time, they're going to haul the actor away from the scenery. And after I convinced myself that I'd given such a sterling performance. Smashing report, indeed.
Would it help if I tried a recital of Kipling's If? It kills them in the provinces.
It's likely to prove lethal here, too. But thank you, my dear, anyway. As organizer and sole member of the William Todd Hunter Hall Fan Club, you've done some noble work.
No, Toddy, you don't have to try and laugh it off for me. Get it out of your system, darling. Grow up.
Curse the Board of Governors. And their promise that I wouldn't have to spend my time wangling emoluments. Curse my folly in believing them. To the devil with all fatheads who kept me away from the students. Bah!
Oh, that was lovely.
No wonder they feel no affection for me. I'm so seldom with them. Not that to know me is to
to love me, you understand.
I understand nothing of the sort. I know you very well, and I'm mad about you.
How difficult it is to... Oh, thank you, my dear. How difficult it is to maintain contact with the student body. One college president I know scheduled a speech to the senior class for the sole purpose of proving that he actually did exist.
Oh.
And that's what's wrong with my report.
Oh, Toddy, I'm sure it's a superb report.
No, on the contrary. I omitted all reference, beyond a few statistics, to the most important part of any school, the students, and what they think about the state of Ivy. I should have found time to teach more courses. Look at Hutchins at Chicago and Conant at Harvard. The students are what make a college, not campus buildings and installations. Diogenes discoursed from a tub, and his students listened, and it was a school.
Toddy, look, talking of tubs, I see Professor Heaslip.
Well.
Through this hedge. He's just leaving his front door.
Is there a snowman on his lawn?
Yes, a very small one, which he has just made larger with two handfuls of snow. Oh, he's heard us and stepped back.
Well, hello there. Good morning, Skipper. Good morning, fair lady.
Good morning.
Good morning, Heaslip. It's a nice snowman you have there.
Yes, it's a very nice little one.
Oh, you should have seen it before the sun came up and melted it. Amazing how quickly it went. This is the warmest part of Faculty Row, you know.
Oh, really? I found the whole area very cold.
Oh, that's a mistake, Skipper. That snowman was inches lower. I mean higher a few minutes ago. It melted down considerably. Also, the boys and girls happened to have chosen a slight dip in the ground in which to build it. Actually much taller than it looks. Optical illusion, you know. Not that I pay any attention to such things, of course.
Of course.
I'm happy the students like me as much as they do.
Of course.
I've often asked myself why. Naturally, I don't court their affection. I'm very strict, but a fair pedagogue, if I say so myself. Perhaps it's the occasional humor with which I sprinkle my lectures.
For example?
I was discussing nature references in the poetry of the more eminent Victorians, one of whom referred to a dogwood tree in some lyric or other. I asked my students if they knew how to distinguish a dogwood tree, and when they said they didn't, I told them. By its bark. Well, I must be getting to class. Good morning, Skipper.
Good morning, Heathcliff.
Good morning, fair lady.
Good morning.
The warmest part of Faculty Row, indeed. And yet, for the sake of that little snowman, I think I'd almost be willing to change places with Heaslip.
Mm, it'd be a little bit rough on me.
What are the boys and girls, as he calls them, see in the man? Well, it's true he has no enemies, but that's more than balanced for the fact that none of his friends like him.
Well, let's turn back, Toddy.
Oh, this is probably one of the last times we'll ever stroll along here, Victoria. It's an attractive little street, isn't it?
Yes.
I've lived here a long time.
And I've loved it here.
You see that house across the way?
Mm-hmm.
I had a furnished room there when I was an instructor. On the top floor. Kitchen privileges. Female visitors permitted only as far as the front parlor. Please turn out the light before leaving the room.
Liberty Hall, wasn't it?
Then when I was appointed assistant professor, I moved over to this side of the street. Sitting room, bedroom and bath, hot plate permitted, no wild parties.
Oh, what exactly was a wild party at Ivy in those days?
If I remember correctly, more than two people laughing at the same time. but then I allowed my appointment to a full professorship to go to my head, and I rented that Charles Adams mansion over there.
Oh, it wasn't a Charles Adams mansion. It was a wonderful old place to live.
Yes, it was, wasn't it? I mean, after I brought you there. It was fairly empty when I occupied it all by myself. It echoed. Empty and unsatisfying, and nothing I did with it, new furniture, new drapes, fresh paint, seemed to propitiate the fat little gods of the hearth.
Until you offered them me as a human sacrifice, eh?
You might very well have been mistaken for a human sacrifice as I handed you down from the taxi that first morning. You were scared to death.
Yeah, I was. I'd never had a home of my own before. Just hotel rooms and flats and theater dressing rooms.
Look, here we are, driver. And this is for you. This is our home, Victoria.
Oh, William. It's exactly the way I imagined it. All covered with vines and so very peaceful and quiet. And oh, look! My name's on the letterbox.
I sent a letter from England asking that it can be done.
Professor W. Hall and Mrs. Victoria Cromwell Hall. Oh, thank you, Toddy, for being such a dear love. Is it always as quiet as this?
Yes. Nearly always.
And empty. I don't see any students.
One of them has just seen you. You seem to have arrived in more ways than one. Come on, let's go inside.
Oh, please take my hand. I'm suddenly appalled at how little I know about taking care of a household.
Hang on tight, darling. I have shortcomings, too.
Promise you'll overlook mine until I've learnt my way around.
I promise. It'll be a mutual understanding. Now, what did I do with the key?
Can't you find it?
Well, I could swear I had it in my hand. I thought I... Oh, I do have it in my hand.
Oh, you're as nervous as I am, really, aren't you? I'm
yes.
So glad. I keep on forgetting you're new at this, too.
There. No, wait.
What?
Wait. There's a little ceremony involved here, a very nice one. I'll carry you across the threshold, like this.
Oh, Toddy, look, a snowman.
A snowman? What's a snowman doing in our hallway?
Well, don't you see it? The students must have come while we were out walking.
Yeah, but they've no right to build one inside the house. And where did they get the snow in May?
Oh, Toddy, it's a snowman, and it isn't May, it's February.
Yes, I know, but we...
From wherever you were, dear, come back. You have a snowman.
Yeah, but I mean...
And
what?
It's the most enormous snowman you've ever seen. Right over there.
Oh. Why, it is a snowman. In our front yard. Vicky, I... This is our house, isn't it?
Yes, of course it is. Oh, Toddy, you're always losing yourself in your thoughts.
Not completely, my darling, because you're always with me. But I don't understand this snowman.
Look at this. There should be a note attached to it. Yes, it's addressed to you. Here, what does it say?
Well, one moment. To President Hall, the delay in construction is entirely your fault. If you must work nights, please do so in one of the back rooms and avoid those overlooking the front of the house. In that way, the traditional anonymity of the built... They misspelt anonymity. The traditional anonymity of the builders will be preserved. Affectionately, classes of 50 to 53 inclusive. Well, now. Of course, it was probably a good bit larger when they first put it up. After all, this is the warmest part of Faculty Row, you know.
Yeah, I know. Could you stand a bit of breakfast and some sleep now?
Breakfast, by all means, but no sleep as yet. Remember, I have the report to get out.
Another report?
The same one, but better. Far better and a great deal more inclusive. Directly after breakfast, I shall want to see the presidents of every class in my study. Yes, and the officers of all student organizations, too.
All at once in your little study?
Oh, we'll get them in, my dear. We'll get them in. Look at that snowman. It's good packing today.
The Halls of Ivy, on Tuned to Yesterday, from the 19th of December, 1951, on NBC. This is an hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Don Quinn, the writer of The Halls of Ivy, actually wrote for Fibber McGee and Molly First and did the Halls of Ivy program as a way to sort of appeal to the intelligentsia listening in to comedy programs on the air. But this is one of his great triumphs as well. Fibber McGee and Molly from Christmas Day 1945 on NBC.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the Kingsmen and Billy Mills Orchestra. It isn't very often that our broadcast brings us into your home right on Christmas. All of us on the show and the makers of Johnson's Wax products consider it a privilege and an honor to be included in your family circle tonight and to have an opportunity to say Merry Christmas. To those of you who've made a vow to do your shopping earlier next Christmas, we'd like to suggest that there are only 365 days left. And if you hurry, maybe you can get one of those unique and handsome articles like the one just presented to and now being admired by Fibber McGee and Molly.
Imagine old Doc Gamble giving us one of these, Molly. Isn't that the most beautiful present you ever saw?
It certainly is.
Gosh.
I haven't seen so much chromium since that was what the Silver Service Aunt Sarah sent us in 1937 turned out to be.
And look how solid it's built.
Yes.
There's real construction in this.
Certainly is well made.
You don't pick these things up in bargain basements, kiddo. There was a lot of thought went into buying a thing like this.
I'll bet there was.
Yes, sir.
What is it?
What do you mean? What is it?
I mean, what is it?
Why, it's one of those things that... you use it to... Well, they sort of... I don't know what it is.
Well, weren't there any directions or instructions or anything in the package it came in?
Nope. Came all wrapped up in red tissue paper. Yards and yards of it. My eyes are still a little bloodshot from unwrapping it.
By the way, what did you send Dr. Gamble this year? A book, wasn't it?
Yeah, a book. What to do till the doctor comes. With this thing, I'll be doggone if I know whether to listen to this or cook with it. I don't know whether to tune it in, turn it on, or toss it out.
Well, we just have to ask Dr. Gamble what it is.
Oh, no. We can't do that. That wouldn't be polite.
And when did you start being polite to Dr. Gamble?
Oh.
You're usually at each other's throats like a couple of necktie salesmen.
Yeah, but my gosh, Molly, when a guy gives you a beautiful gift like this, you hate to admit you haven't got the brains to know what it's for.
Well, I don't hate to admit it. I don't know what it's for.
Well, me either, but I ain't going to give that old sulfur huckster the satisfaction of knowing it. Maybe somebody else will tip us off.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Mr. McGee, Merry Christmas.
Same to you, Alice, and thank you for the handkerchief.
You're welcome, Mrs. McGee, and thank you for the handkerchief.
Not at all, dear.
Well, if you kids are through batting them hankies around, I'd like to ask Alice a question.
Why, certainly, Mr. McGee. And if you're going to ask me what I think you're going to ask,
mm-hmm.
The reason Harold and I stood on the porch so long last night when he brought me home was on account of I couldn't find my front door key.
Why, we never locked the front door, Alice. You knew that.
Yes, I knew that, but Harold didn't.
Who's Harold, Alice?
Oh, Harold is a fat old lady who was a buyer for the corset department at the Bon Ton's nephew. She's nice, though.
Who is?
Harold's aunt.
Oh.
She's a corset department buyer and also substitutes for the manager of household goods when she takes a day off in the basement just to the left of the elevators.
Oh, down there. Look, we got a door slam coming up here any minute, Alice. So let's get down to business. You see this thing that Doc Gamble gave us for Christmas?
Creepy. Spruce, isn't that beautiful? May I use it sometime?
Oh, you certainly may, Alice. Anytime, and we'll watch it.
How do you use it, Alice? I mean, I just wondered if you use it the same way we do.
Oh, I probably do, Mr. McGee. How do you use it?
Now, he asked you first, dear.
Yeah, I just wanted to be sure you knew how to operate it, Alice. I wouldn't want you to get hurt, you know.
Get hurt with one of these things? Oh, Mr. McGee, you say the funniest things. Well, I've got to go now. I have several more presents to take around.
Where are they, Alice? Did you leave them upstairs?
No, I left them right here in the hall.
No, no, Alice, please.
Not on Christmas night, Alice.
Right here in the hall table drawer.
I thought for a minute there she was going...
It's the present for Ozzy I put in the hall closet. No. Come to think of it, I nailed it to him. Well, Mary...
McGee.
Huh?
Will you please stop worrying about that gift from Dr. Gamble? You've sat in that chair for 2 hours just staring at it.
I'm going to sit here till I figure out what it's for, too. Any hunk of chromium-plated aluminum going to make a monkey out of me. I'll figure it out if I... Hey, I'll bet it's a gopher trap.
Why should Dr. Gamble give you a gopher trap? There are no gophers in this part of the country.
Well, what's that got to do with it? He gave me Paris garters last year, and we're 4,000 miles from France.
Well, you've been through France. You've never been through a gopher hole.
Look, let's analyze this thing. Now, here's the handle here on top, see?
How do you know it's a handle?
Well, it stands to reason. It's kind of a loop that just fits the hand.
Well, I've got a gadget out in the kitchen with four of those loops on it, and it's an egg beater.
Okay, but let's just say it's a handle, just for the sake of argument.
All right, it's a handle.
Fine. Now we're getting someplace. All right, just below the handle here, there's a circular disc. That's obviously to protect the hand against something.
Such as what?
Such as I don't know what. Yeah. Then we got two long, sharp prongs sticking out below it, like daggers. Now then, all we got to do is figure out what a thing like that is for.
Well... We've certainly made tremendous strides, haven't we? You knew that the minute you opened it up.
Now, let me see. If I hold it like this and somebody jogged my arm, I'd have two holes in my leg. Can't be right.
Isn't there anything movable on it, dearie? No working parts?
I haven't been able to find any. However, a few minutes ago, I was turning it this way and that, and all of a sudden, a sharp pain went through me. Kind of a stabbing sensation.
Like electricity or something?
No, like you'd left your manicure scissors here in this chair and I'd sat on them, which you had, and I did.
Well, you were using them last, dearie, cutting stamps off the Christmas card.
Yeah, well, I wanted them for my stamp collection. Got two from Indiana and one from Florida. Found another good one from Oklahoma, but I had to throw it away on account of I couldn't tell whether it was north or south. Hey, if that's Doc Gamble, stall him a minute. If I can figure out what this gadget's for, I won't have to be humiliated by asking him what he's...
It's just Mrs. Carstairs, McGee.
Oh, that old tomato surprise. Miss East St. Louis of 1904. She's had her face lifted so many times, she has to walk on her toes.
Yeah, but my goodness, she's... Come in.
How old man Carstairs was nearsighted enough to... Merry Christmas, Carstairs.
And the same to you, Mr. McGee, and Mrs. McGee.
Thank you, Millicent. Move all those boxes and packages and things off the chair so Mrs. Carstairs can sit down, McGee.
Why, sure.
Well, Kris Kringle seems to have done very well by you, my dear.
Ah, he did indeed, Mrs. Carstairs. The only thing I wanted that I didn't get was a new waffle iron. Kris crossed me on that.
I done all right, though, Carsty. What do you think of this thing that Doc Gamble gave me?
Yes. I gave my husband one of those for his birthday.
Oh.
They make a splendid gift, for men.
Now, what did he do with it, Mrs. Carstairs?
Oh, he still has it, my dear.
Yeah, but what was it for?
For his birthday.
But what is it good for?
Well, I only know what the salesman told me, my dear. And he said it was good for years and years. By the way, Mrs. McGee, thank you so much for the lovely handkerchief.
I'm so glad you like them, Millicent. And thank you for the lovely handkerchief. They're so beautiful, I've been sitting around in drafts trying to catch cold.
Look, Karsty, getting back to this gadget here, just exactly...
Oh, I almost forgot. Let me show you what my husband gave me for Christmas. Here. Isn't it beautiful?
Oh. Ah, for goodness sake. A cornet.
Oh, no, no, my dear. A trumpet. Something I've always wanted.
You mean you can play one of them things, Karsty?
Oh, yes, a little, Mr. McGee.
Well.
Confidentially, I played truant from Wellesley one year and went on the road as trumpet player for Bumpsy Van Jive's original Barrel House Dance Bandits. Oh, such fun, really. And you know what?
No, what, Millicent?
On May 12th, I've been invited to play as guest trumpeter at the Wistful Vista Racetrack.
No kidding. Let's hear you play Boots and Saddles, Karsty.
Oh, certainly.
Millicent.
Yeah, you better go easy on that hot finish, though, Karsty. You'll have Busher and Whirlaway coming around the clubhouse turn doing the Lindy Hop.
Oh, I shall have to brush up a bit, of course. I've almost lost my embouchure.
What on earth is an embouchure?
Well, that, my dear, is a French term, meaning an osculation in brass. Well, I must be going.
Hey, wait a minute, Karsty. About this gadget here, what's it for and how do you use it?
Well, that depends, Mr. McGee. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
Oh, he's right-handed.
Oh, then, of course, you use it in your left hand, Mr. McGee, thus leaving the right hand free to work with. Well, Merry Christmas to both of you.
Yeah. At least I know this thing is to be used in the left hand. That's a big help.
Can you imagine her playing the trumpet, McGee? Oh. And very well, too, I thought.
Yeah, I can hardly wait for her guest shot at the racetrack. That'll be the first time anybody blew their brains out before a race. Hey, do you suppose this thing could be a potato slicer?
I do not. Huh? Anybody who approached a beautiful Idaho potato with a lethal weapon like that would get a nasty note from Governor Williams.
Oh.
Look.
Huh?
I have an idea. Let me see it a minute.
Okay, but be careful. Them prongs are sharp. Matter of fact, a gift like this ought to be labeled from Harry to Carrie. With love. Harry, why do you want to look at it, Molly?
Look, now, all you have to do is write to the man who made this and ask him what it's for.
Hot dog, is his name on there?
It certainly is, stamped right into the metal.
What is it?
Tap pending.
Pat. Oh, Molly, that's the...
Merry Christmas, Molly. The same to you, Max.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Junior. You're just the guy I wanted to see.
Yes, Mr. Wilcox. We received a simply wonderful gift.
Oh, you mean that electric iron I sent you? Glad you liked it.
Yeah, but that isn't the thing
I thought it'd be a good gift for you, Molly, considering the time you spend pressing his nibs trousers here. He's the only guy I know who always looks like he'd been smuggling cantaloupes in his pant leg.
Ah, now, Mr. Wilcox.
Look, Junior, when you grow up, you'll realize that clothes ain't so awful important.
No. You ever try walking down 14th Street without any?
Well, he means that you can't judge a man by his clothes, Mr. Wilcox.
Certainly not. The seats of the mighty are often shiny, Junior. Mm. Remember that. Mm. Better to have bags under the knees than under the eyes. There's many a dull character going around with sharp creases.
Yes, I know.
A wide lapel don't cover up a narrow mind, Junior. And a two-faced fella can look awful good in a single-breasted coat.
Yeah.
A loud check don't make much noise in the First National Bank, too,
well,
either.
Well, so why?
And the horsehair out of some people's shoulder pads would look a lot better on the original horse's neck. Now. You got any more sartorical comments to make?
No, Dad, I'm through.
Well, good. Now maybe we can get down to business. Show Mr. Wilcox what you got for Christmas, dearie.
Here, Junior, this thing. Ever see one of these before?
Seen them? Why, I used to manufacture them.
Huh?
Sure. My brother, Big Sedgwick Wilcox, and I had a little factory together.
Oh, heavenly days. Our troubles are over.
Hot dog. Used to build these things, eh, Junie? Well, sit down, boy. Pass him the cigars, Molly. Have a panatella, fella.
I don't use them, thanks.
Oh.
Of course, when I was manufacturing these gadgets, it was before I ever heard of Johnson's self-polishing glow coat.
Oh, of course, but when you made these things...
Which reminds me, folks, I have a little message from the Johnson Wax people.
Well, are we supposed to fall on the floor with loud shouts of amazement, Waxy? You got more messages in your system than Western Union. Only every tenth word is Johnson instead of love.
Now, don't let him stop you, Mr. Wilcox. Go right ahead.
Okay. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, same to you, son. Go ahead with the message.
That was it. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from the Johnson Wax people in Racine, Wisconsin and Brantford, Ontario. Now then, what were you saying about this Christmas present?
Well, he wants to know what it's for, and so do I.
I'm sorry, Molly. I promised Doc Gamble I wouldn't tell. He said he was giving you this and for me not to spoil the surprise. Well, jingle bells, kid.
Jingle bells, kid. Why, of all the dirty low-down tricks. He knew and he wouldn't tell.
Maybe it's a puzzle of some kind, McGee.
You can say that again. Hey, do you suppose this thing is a practical joke? You think it's liable to explode or squirt water out or something?
No, I don't. Dr. Gamble doesn't like practical jokes. You know, he told me once that anybody who would give anybody a loaded cigar ought to be made to eat six of them and then have his appendix removed with a blowtorch.
Ah, that sounds just like our kindly old family physician. Halfway up in the next block. That cow town killed air thinks the human frame is merely something for him and his buddies to play mumbly peg on. He snoops around among the various organs like a prospect in a Wurlitzer sales room. Besides which, if I...
Come in. Well, for goodness sakes, Merry Christmas, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Molly, and the same to you. Merry Christmas, McGee.
Well, likewise, Latrivia. Hey, I got a kind of a problem on my hands, Latrivia.
Well, glad to help you, McGee. What seems to be your trouble?
It's this thing I got for Christmas, Latriv. Look.
What's it for?
What's it for, he says.
That's all, brother. Class dismissed. Well, did you have a nice Christmas, Latrivia?
Splendid, thank you. And you?
Just lovely, Your Honor. I gave himself here a nice leather tackle box, and he bought me a new hat.
He bought you a new hat?
You betcha, and a beauty, too, Latrivia, if I do say so myself as I shouldn't. It's right there on the floor, right in front of you there in that box.
Say, that is a beautiful hat.
Hey, don't step on it, Latrivia. Oh,
I won't, don't worry. I usually keep an eagle eye about me.
Do you really, Mr. Mayor? That's interesting.
I always carry an elk's tooth myself. But every guy to his own good luck piece, I always say.
You misunderstood me, McGee. When I said I usually keep an eagle's eye about me,
How do you carry it, Latrivia? On a chain?
Of course not. Don't be ridiculous. I just
it's in a ring. Take your gloves off and let's see it, Mr. Mayor. I've never seen an eagle's eye ring.
I do not have an evil eye. I mean eagle's eye. It isn't a case of having an...
Oh, what do we care if it ain't a real eagle's eye, Latrivia? You mustn't be ashamed of a little thing like that.
I'm not ashamed of it. There's nothing to be ashamed of. I don't own one.
Oh, it's one you borrowed. Something borrowed, something blue, a good luck piece will keep you true.
Will you both stop this nonsense? Good heavens, I didn't intend to...
It may be nonsense to you, Latrivia, but to thousands of people, a good luck charm means something. Maybe it's an elk's tooth, maybe an old coin, maybe an eagle's eye, but a charm...
I tell you, I have no charm.
Don't be so modest, Your Honor. Why, you have lots of charm.
Sure you have, boy. Don't lose confidence in yourself. Just look people in the eye.
I don't want to look eagles in the eye. People in the charm. I mean to say, if I's an eagle, an eagle's eye is... I merely tried to say that I had an owl's ring. An elf's coin. Tooth. And you mistook. You mistook. You understand? It's always a very... Every time I open my mouth, you just... I mistake. You... McGee.
Yes?
May I say one thing before I leave?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor.
What is it, Latrivia, old man?
Simply this, McGee. You have your foot in Molly's hat. Good day.
Huh? Oh!
And here are the King's Men with Jingle Bell.
You have probably heard this song 100 times today, but this is how we warble it down Whistledist-a-way. A day or two ago, when all the ground was white,
I thought I'd take a ride with pretty Fanny Bright. I got my bobtail nag, 240 for his speed. I hitched him to an open sleigh and crack, I took the lead. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits light.
Oh, what fun to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one horse open sleigh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one horse open sleigh.
So we started back right then. Her paw'd be waiting at the gate if we weren't home by 10. The horse was lean and lank. Misfortune seemed his lot. He fell into a drifted bank and we got upsot.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse.
It couldn't be a bootjack. Stab yourself in the ankle every time you use it. How about a can opener? Oh, no, it's too simple. Oh, I got it. Hey, Molly.
Yes, dearie?
You know what this is? It's a potato masher. Am I dumb not to have thought of that before?
If that was a masher, dearie, and I was a potato, I'd certainly slap his face.
You don't think it's a potato masher?
To give you a short answer, no.
Oh.
Those two sharp prongs would stab holes in a saucepan and nothing flat.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Well, I wish I could get the answer. As the phonograph needle said to the turntable, this thing is driving me into an early groove.
Well, I can see just one way out, dearie. Call Dr. Gamble and tell him frankly that you don't know what his gift is for.
Oh, I hate to do that. He'd have the laugh on me the rest of my life. Suppose it turned out to be a necktie rack or something simple like that. Wouldn't I look dopey?
Well, my goodness, you can't sit in that chair the rest of your days glaring at it. Why don't you do something?
Come in.
Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble. Merry Christmas.
Same to you, my dear. And even to you, Marblehead.
Thank you, Aerosmith. It's always nice to see you in our little home.
Thank you.
Because while you're in our little home, we know you're not torturing some helpless patient.
Stop it now, McGee. Why don't you two boys ever say anything nice about each other?
That's a good idea, Molly. You first, McGee. Say something nice about me.
My gosh, I can't think of anything.
Neither can I. Oh, well, have a nice Christmas, folks.
Oh, just grand, Doctor. We got so many nice things.
And some interesting things, too, Doc.
Yes?
Some of our friends really use their ingenuity.
Hmm.
Now, you take... I'll get it.
I'll get it. 79 Wistful Vista, Molly McGee speaking. Who? Yes, he's right here. For you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Just tell him to put a mustard plaster on it, and if the veins start coming too close together, they're smoking too much.
I speak.
Hello. Hello, Gamble speaking. Who? Oh, yes, Mrs. Holland. He won't. Well, tie his legs together and try again. I'll be there as soon as I can. Goodbye.
Nurse?
Housekeeper. Can't get our turkey in the oven.
Talking about?
We were talking about the interesting things people send people for Christmas.
Such as what, McGee?
Well, now, for instance, that wonderful gift you sent McGee, Doctor.
This, Doc.
Oh, yes. You like it?
Oh, do we like it? We love it, Doctor. McGee just tickled to death with it.
Don't know how I ever got along without one, Doc.
Well, that's great, my boy.
Yeah?
You had me sort of stymied there for a while, and then I thought of this. I said to myself, aha, I said, that's just the thing for McGee.
The thing I like about it is there's no complicated machinery to it.
No, it's extremely simple.
It sure is.
Yep.
Was there any directions come with it, Doc?
Directions? For a simple little thing like that?
Don't be silly, dear. You certainly don't need instructions for a gadget like that. Why, there isn't a moving part on it.
I was just kidding. My gosh, a child could manage this.
I certainly.
I wonder where I could borrow a child. Hey, Doc.
Yeah?
I just wondered if... Well, when you use this, it's...
What he means, Doctor, is this. You know, he thinks so much of your gift, he doesn't want to damage it by using it wrong. How do you use it?
Well, great Scott, how does anybody use it?
Well, that's a good question.
Ah, for the... I give up. Look, Doc,
yes.
While I really appreciate this gift...
And we've always wanted one,
there's one little thing I want to know.
What's that, my boy?
What in Sam Hill is it for?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Well, then why did you give it to me?
Because you gave it to me last Christmas, Picklepoot.
Want to solve the mystery of that gadget, why don't you call the people you bought it from?
They wouldn't know.
Why wouldn't they?
I just happened to think. I won that thing on a punch board. Cost me 70 cents.
Ah, dear. Well, let's forget the whole thing. What do you say?
I say this. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very, very special Christmas. The first peacetime Christmas in 5 years. For millions of war victims all over the world, it isn't a very merry one. Which makes us doubly appreciative of our own blessings.
Among which we count the friendship of all of you who have been so loyal to us these many years.
Merry Christmas to you.
And good night, all.
Fibber McGee and Molly on Tuned to Yesterday, a Christmas Day 1945 broadcast from NBC. Bringing to a close this hour of Christmas programs on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Happy holidays.